Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome in, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've already had to scrap some plans with the Sabres beginning training camp today. We were originally planning on talking to Mark Long of the AP about the Jacksonville Jaguars at 11 o'clock. We've scrapped that. We are planning on taking Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff live with the media following practice today. He's expected to speak around 10:45, could, though, push into the 11 o'clock hour. We will see on that, but we will be taking him live here as, of course, you've probably seen the news on Twitter, but if you have not, Josh, what, 5 minutes into practice?
Literally 5 minutes into
practice. Rasmus Dahlin, first guy out there, ultimately ends up leaving early. No one really knows what's going on, and then the Sabres did announce that he will not return to practice and that they will have more later on when Ruff does speak with the media. So, of course, we are going to be taking that live. Made a few jokes. Was hoping it was nothing. And now it's a little worrying. I mean, you're 5 minutes into camp. And that's not even the only thing that kind of caused some concern. Peyton Krebs hits Tage Thompson, and he's laboring. And you're
just like, it sounds like that one was just kind of like a got the wind knocked out of you, welcome back to practice kind of thing.
But you see the tweet, and you're like, we are 10 minutes in.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, what happened? Where is this? Why does this happen? You know, and we don't know the extent of what's going on with Dahlin. We'll find out more from head coach Lindy Ruff in a little while after practice. But my vibes, honestly, were like through the roof. It hit me yesterday a little bit, and this morning when Adams was talking, and then when Paul came on with Joe, and you can hear the background noise. You hear Lindy yelling in the background. And I'm like,
yeah,
this is great. Hockey's back. It feels so good. Like, we're here. And it's just immediately destroyed as soon as the Dahlin news comes out of him leaving practice. And then it was like, all right, well, hey, maybe, you know, maybe there was an equipment issue. Maybe he'll be back in a few minutes, whatever. 10, 15 minutes goes by, and it's like, well, he's not back yet. Where'd he go?
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, our own Paul Hamilton tweeting out that he won't return to practice. That's not good news. It's not great, but you don't know the extent of it yet. So it's still a little up in the air. But fingers crossed, and have to wait and see.
It's the wait and see period now, which is awful.
Right.
I mean, because it could be something where he's just going to be day-to-day. You know, tweak something. He's day-to-day.
Yeah.
We'll maybe hold him back to going to Europe or what have you.
Listen, though, I this is where we talk about this. This comes up every year around this time. Football injury reports are so good because you get down to the minute detail of what is happening and how long they will be out or expected to be out. In hockey, you get upper body or lower body.
They're very vague.
Yeah, and it's just,
it's my favorite.
It's just, yep, lower body, day-to-day. Cool. What does that mean? That tells me nothing. So I'm not really looking forward to that designation. I'm almost looking forward to just how does Lindy talk about it? How does the team talk about it? Because if they're talking about it in a way of like, yeah, you know, he's just out for today. You know, he'll be fine. Then it's like, okay. But if there's like this kind of weight in their voice a little bit, if you want to call it like a different type of feeling, then it's like, okay, well, the vibe does not feel good in terms of that. So we'll have to wait and see. I don't want to jump to any conclusions here, but it's, you know, it's just not great timing to have it happen, you know, 5 minutes into the first practice, especially too on the rush timetable of you're going to Europe in a week. And
I mean, didn't
preseason starts on Saturday?
And Sabres GM Kevin Adams, he spoke earlier today with the media before practice started, mm-hmm. and kind of even, you know, put an emphasis on that this is going to be kind of an accelerated bit. Paul, we talked to him yesterday. He said kind of the same thing. This is a weird training camp.
Well, and the way Adams put it was basically this is when the season starts. It's not the start of training camp. It's mm-hmm. the start of the season, because you have to have an accelerated tempo in terms of getting these guys ready to play games on Saturday and Sunday. And then also Tuesday, mm-hmm. you have three games in 4 days. So along with a trip to Europe where you'll be playing an exhibition game against a team in Germany. And then the start of the regular season. So it's all very boom, 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 quick. Like it's yep. the first game is on October 4th, which is 2 weeks from Friday.
Yeah.
It's 16 days away.
It's incredibly, incredibly fast turnaround.
So you have to be ready.
That's the thing. So like any injury, though, is somewhat of a cause for concern.
Right.
Because it is not, I mean, we joke about it a lot. I mean, you've talked about it a lot off air as well. Just like the NFL NFL training camp preseason schedule takes forever.
Right. And then once you get there, it's finally, boom, there it is.
Yeah. And it's quote unquote takes forever. It's not the longest period of the offseason.
Feels like it, though.
It feels like it. And then the preseason games, you're like, oh my goodness, can we hurry this up?
Well, it's like
with the Sabres, you're like, what do you mean we have a preseason game tomorrow? Like, it's that feeling.
But it is, if you think about it, I mean, with football, it's like a month and a half of training camp and preseason. So it's not, I mean, hockey is 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, you know, there's different restrictions on practicing and things like that. Like, players can practice together and stuff. And obviously, they can in football, too, but it's a little just different. But, I mean, I feel like I saw videos all summer of, like, you know, Dylan Cousins and Owen Power skating together and things like that. But, and you have the prospects, obviously, too, where that's basically their version of minicamp and all that. But it's all so much closer together because you had the prospects challenge last week, and now you have training camp right now. And everything else going on as well. So it just feels faster because it's all closer together. In reality, it's about the same time span, but football's just more spread out.
Yeah.
It's hard because, like, this Dahlin news, it's not great. And if you're just tuning in, Rasmus Dahlin left practice 5 minutes into practice or around that and did not return or will not return. No other news on that yet in terms of why or what happened or whatever. But everything else from practice so far has looked intriguing. Devin Levi has a cool set of pads. I mean, I'm looking at a video right now of him making some saves in these, like, old school brown pads. That looks pretty sweet.
It's ugly. It's fine.
Stop. No. you don't appreciate old goaltending.
Does anybody?
I do. Those guys used to stand in front of it with no mask, barely any pads.
150 yards outside of the crease.
Exactly. So you're getting to the puck faster. The velocity is higher.
Getting to the puck faster.
Aside from that.
As 10 goals get passed in the second period.
Hey, listen. Anyway, there's also videos of all these players kind of adjusting to these Lindy Ruff practices. There's guys in the corner just like
laboring.
Yeah. Like, not because they got hit by Peyton Krebs, but because you're skating a lot. And there's videos of Lindy like pulling the team in and like, hey, you didn't do this right. Hey, you didn't do that right. And obviously you get that with every coach and every team. But last year, with the way that people were talking about practice and the way Casey Mittelstadt talked about practice after he left the team, it just feels like that part of it is different because you have more energy, you have more alertness. I don't know what the word would, or urgency. There's the word.
Yeah, urgency is probably a good way to
put it. I couldn't think of the word there. But yeah, you have the urgency there, and it just feels different in that way. Then you also have the new Jumbotron. Thing looks sweet.
Which, I guess.
It looks pretty cool. Like, they had, like, they were practicing, like, they were checking out, like, the, they're going to have on the corners, like, the time of the player on the ice, like, the shift times.
Yeah.
And, like, it's cool because it's, like, completely wrapped. So it's all one big screen. There's no breaks in it. And I don't know. I just like the way it looks. It looks cool. It's big and it's new. It's a fun new thing.
Again, it's going to be one of those things that eventually, when I go and they play the little pump up right before, I'm going to get goosebumps. I'm going to get a little emotional.
I'm really,
like I do look, every time.
Think about it. With the new screen, how it's all continuous, you could have like a wrap. You know how they have the buffalo?
Yep.
When the players come out, they have the buffaloes running across the screen. They could just run in a circle around that Jumbotron.
That would be so kind of cool.
That would look so cool. Aside from that, though, that's not obviously the full reason to be excited about practice. The practice is here.
And already having so much fun.
Right.
So I had a little bit of fun, though, before we jumped on air. I am a nerd. Most people do know this. I am, of course, a jock, athlete, what have you. We talk in sports radio, obviously. But my second passion is nerddom. I'm a huge fantasy sci-fi guy, the whole thing. And that does mean I'm a massive Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones fan, the author being George R. R. Martin. I've been feeling this way, Josh, for a while. And now finally was today the day that I'm like, we're going to run with this. I'm going to piece together as much as I can in terms of similarities between the Buffalo Sabres organization and A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones creator, George R. R. Martin. I did not realize how alarmingly similar they were. So let's begin. And this is going to be real quick. It's more something to have fun, you know, bring some levity to what could be a long day for a lot of us, especially, you know, there was excitement for the season to start, and that could turn very quickly. Their first years, the Sabres, of course, is 1970. George R. R. Martin's first published work, that being The Hero, was a short story in 1971. Peak years. This is arguable. I'm already having this conversation with somebody on Twitter. For the Sabres, it is the late 90s, early 2000s. If you just go to the late 90s for the Buffalo Sabres, it is a number of conference finals, Stanley Cup finals, semifinals. They have a Hart Trophy winner twice in the goaltending position. That's the 90s.
The 90s only had one Stanley Cup final, the 99 final.
Yeah. Did I say multiple?
You said multiple, but it was only one.
Multiple conference
finals. But still.
A cup final.
Yeah.
A number of years. They were not being stood up in the playoffs in the 70s and 80s like they were for years, where they were losing in the preliminary round constantly. You also have two Hart Trophy wins with Dominic Hasek. You do have bad years, don't get me wrong, in the true early 2000s. And then you pop off in the 06-07 or 05-06, 06-07 to, for many fans, their favorite years. They came out of nowhere, they were lightning fast, they scored a lot, and arguably should have won a Stanley Cup in there. They do win the President's Trophy, though, and of course do make a cup final or a conference final as well. For Martin, peak years, which is the A Song of Ice and Fire publishing, the late 90s and early 2000s. Three of the five books are published in a four-year run from 96 to 2000. Then he also publishes in 05 and then 11. But that's also, I think, a big point of similarities between the two, which is a weird run in the early 2000s where they weren't doing anything. Sabres were missing the playoffs. They had fears of relocation.
They also lost Chris Drury and Danny Briere.
Yep. Where with Martin, he goes from 2000, he publishes A Storm of Swords, to 05, he publishes A Feast for Crows. He has to cut a main plot point that he had planned from the beginning in like the 80s when he was designing this, which was the five-year gap. There was supposed to be for those that watch the show and don't read the books, think of it after season four, there was supposed to be a five-year time jump that is completely cut. And then that's where we get the last two books that have been published, A Feast for Crows in 05 and Dance with Dragons in 2011. Notice the 2011 thing. Their last actual kind of signs of relevancy, 2011. Martin begins A Game of Thrones with HBO and also publishes A Dance with Dragons, his last main book in A Song of Ice and Fire. Do not give me Fire and Blood. That was co-written. It's not even that good. And that was years after. And it was mainly just due to his publishers being like, dude, we need to put something out while Game of Thrones is on the air. And then for the Sabres, it, of course, is their last playoff appearance, 2011. They are literally months apart. Martin publishes that in, I believe, the spring of 2011. The Sabres are late winter, early spring for their final playoff appearance.
Well, it would be spring.
It'd be spring. I think his was spring into summer, because I think Game of Thrones started in July. Then we have the first experiences of false hope. For the Sabres, of course, after 2011, it began the tank. They lose the draft lottery, but are getting American superstar Jack Eichel out of Boston. He is drafted in 2015. Martin's first missed deadlines for Winds of Winter, the book we are all still waiting for, 2016. They are step for step for step with each other, and it's making me uncomfortable.
I'm going to need a thesis on this from you.
I'm going to write one.
Write a paper.
I'm going to write one, I think. It's alarmingly similar how, again, they're not one for one, but they're steps
very,
with each other.
Like, it's very close.
Especially, I mean, there's been other signs of false hope. The 10-game win streak for the Sabres, Martin getting positive on his blog. Him saying he's written chapters during COVID. The Sabres, you know, almost making the playoffs 2 years ago.
Right. Almost making the playoffs during the COVID bubble when they were one yep. point out. Almost making the playoffs 2 years ago when they're one point out.
Yep.
Like,
even if we want crazy. To, last, like, you know, this time last year, we were all really excited for the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they're a high-flying team. They're young. They're fun. Let's go. This is big. Just a few months ago for Martin, new covers are being released for the first time since 2011 when he published the latest book. So everyone's getting excited. And nope, nothing. And then for here, it was kind of the same thing for the Sabres. A lot of excitement. And, oh, they can't win two games in a row for like 6 months. They're the same thing. One is an inanimate object. It is a sports franchise. The other is a person, but they are the same thing. He was even born in the Northeast. I think he's from New Jersey. Give me 1 second. I gotta make sure of this. I think he was born in New Jersey. He was born in New Jersey.
Wow.
They're the same
Look
thing.
Look at that.
The same thing. The only difference is Martin was born in 48. Obviously, the Sabres were born in 1970.
Yeah.
But hockey itself was around in the 40s, so I'm counting it. Because I'm selfish. They're the same thing. False sense of security. Fans get very excited at the littlest... This is not a judgment. Again, I'm part of the Song of Ice and Fire fandom. Fans get super excited at a single, minuscule amount of excitement and hope. Whether that be Jeff Skinner's 40-goal season... J.J. Paterka, Jack Quinn, the prospects, Devin Levi, Tage Thompson emerging. It's all there, man. It is the same thing. And with that being said, I am not confident going into the season now.
I was trying so hard to find out if the Sabres founders, the Knox brothers, if they were also born in 1948. They were not. They were born in 1928.
I will say, though, one positive thing for Sabres fans. The Sabres, I believe, are actively trying to make the playoffs. Martin has not written a word since 2016. That I will die on that hill. He finished the book. It was bad. Scrapped it. Hasn't worked since. He has not written a word. Josh, he goes on his blog post. This is going to be a book that's about 1,300 pages long. War and Peace type size. Whoa. Okay? Get ready for this.
Whoa.
And when he says he's working on it, his latest blog post went, I'm working on pages and pages. Interesting. Pages and pages. George, it's going to be 1,300 pages long. The Sabres at least are like, look, we're signing people. We're making trades. We got a little close. We fired a coach. It's the same thing. But I'm not feeling good now. I'm not feeling good. Now that I've dove into this, and I'm going to do more of this once we're off the air as well. Now that I've dove into this, I'm not feeling as confident as I was going into this year of like, ooh, it's the year where no one really expects anything. Look at the Bills. The Bills this year is arguably kind of the same idea. You know, you had a year, you know, you had a good run. Now it's a year of transition. So what's this year going to be? Nah, you know, maybe they'll make the playoffs, but you don't really think they're going to be all that good. You know, well, they don't have a number one wide receiver. How are they going to keep up with some of the offenses in the NFL? Well, the early signs are no one's really passing the ball that much. And it's running the ball more, which has been the success in the NFL. And now the Bills are 2-0. They're taking on a bad Jaguars team and a Ravens team, which I said on the nightcap last night, if they don't beat Dallas, may already be looking at their season in the face going, well, this was fun, we're done.
Which would be really, really bad.
So,
I mean, they went out and got Derrick Henry and were trying to...
For what that's worth.
Well, right, but it looked like you were trying to, you know, maybe
keep it
make
alive.
It, yeah, trying to keep it going, and it's just, for them, it's just, for the Ravens... If you lose to Dallas, it's not working out because Dallas itself has problems.
But you're in Dallas. They just had a 16-game win streak. It was demolished by New Orleans. Don't get me wrong, but they are very good at playing at home for the most part. But, you know, that's going to be a big thing. But so ultimately, the vibes for the Bills, I mean, and heck, going into Monday night, I mean, if they do beat Jacksonville, go to 3-0 alone, that will change a lot of, I think, of people's opinions on the Bills if you went in negative. Or if you went in kind of thinking this team is not going to be good, it'll be like, oh, well, now wait a second. They're 3-0. They're playing really well. They've scored 30-plus points in each of the last two games, or to the two games to start the year. You feel good. For the Sabres, I was kind of having the same thought of like, yeah, I went with him with a lot of expectations last year, and I only left disappointed. I mean, I've mentioned how you know, the fun year, I went to like 9-10 games. I like anytime there was a Saturday game where I'm like, ooh, I'm not working, I want to go. I need to go because a lot of times it's tough for me to make it. I work the pregame here in during the weekdays. So basically any like weekend game at home I was trying to get to. Last year, very quickly, I was like, I'm out. This team is only making me sad and upset. I'm not doing this. And it kind of felt like it was going to be those moments where, you know, it's darkest before the dawn type deal where all of a sudden this year, and I joke, but like it wouldn't have surprised me that if they started the first 10 games or like 8-2. 8-2 or, you know, 7-3 or 3 and, you know, what have you. And just, you're like, you're good to start and everything looks good and the analytics are liking you and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is still playing great and all this stuff. And it wouldn't have surprised me because it was just no expectations to, boom, they're exciting. But a potential Rasmus Dahlin injury update that is less than day-to-day. You know, we just want to monitor something. No need to push it. It's first day. He's in shape. Is going to be cause for concern. I think rightfully so. And especially in an organization that is in a 13-year playoff drought. And I think ultimately, Josh, has sort of positioned themselves into a point where, and we've talked back and forth about this, I think they've positioned themselves to a point of, did I think Adams botched it the offseason 2 seasons ago? Yes, I do. That was the season where you could have struck the iron when it was hot. Team started to take you more seriously. You had more credibility. You know, Granato was an ascending coach. The team was an ascending group of young players, and they didn't. I'm not saying any other GM would have definitely done it. There's a lot of GMs, I think, in hockey, which is not both – it's not a compliment or a diss, but it is what it is, that would have also tried to just stay the course. There are others, though, that would have gone after it, and I would have liked for Adams to go after it. He didn't. But then after a missed year in which you fired Granato, you had players talking about no accountability, what have you, I think you were putting then back into the same position you were in. You were back into the corner of – good free agents weren't going to sign with you. And good trade targets had you on their no trade clause. And they weren't going to go to you anyways. Do I think they could have made maybe a move? Sure, Ehlers could have been some guy.
There was names out there.
But there was names.
It's tough because when we were talking about this before the show, like Adams comes in and is essentially working with almost nothing and inherits this bad situation with Jack Eichel, has to try to work his way through that without looking like, you know, just, oh, here's the new guy. Let's try to, you know, make the trade as lopsided as possible. Like, he had a lot to do in his first few months as GM. So, and I think all of that stuff worked out well, but it's just that middle point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, last year and even kind of the year before, it was just kind of this very delicate situation that there's some spots that were good, some spots that were not good, and you know, hopefully this is a step in the right direction in towards mm-hmm. the making good decisions and being smart about things. But it's so early on in this new thing of bringing Lindy back mm-hmm. and all the players they brought in this season where it's, you know, shoring up that bottom six, which hasn't been there for years. I mean, for years it was Zemgus, Girgensons, Kyle Okposo, and insert name here.
It vibes.
It was, that was your fourth line. It was those two and Vinny Hinostroza or Tyson Jost mm-hmm. or Peyton Krebs. And granted, Krebs is still here, but now it looks like he's the 13th forward. And you just signed him to a deal, which still have questions about that. But hey, mm-hmm. we'll see what happens there. But as long as, I mean, the philosophy of this management group for the past few years has been banking on the players improving and the young players improving.
And building from
this
within.
This is such a young hockey team.
Still.
The oldest forward on the roster is Jason Zucker.
He's 28?
I think he's older than that. It used to be Alex Tuch, and Alex Tuch is 28.
32.
Okay, yeah. So he's the same age as Skinner, mm-hmm. but obviously in a very different role. Zucker is one of those guys coming in just trying to, you know, maybe reestablish himself a little bit. He has had good years in the NHL. He's had moments where he's been a pivotal role on playoff teams in Minnesota, in Pittsburgh, and even at points in Nashville, he was, you know, kind of doing stuff for them. Mm-hmm. But I think that when you look at how young this team is, yes, there's still the, all right, well, we'll see what they develop into. We'll see what Paterka does this year. We'll see if Quinn can come back from injury. We'll see what Benson does in his second year after a great rookie season.
Yeah.
But that's what you were hoping for last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you were hoping for with Tage Thompson and Dylan Cousins and Peterka. And Peterka had a great year, don't get me wrong. But he needs to have a better one now. He's replacing Jeff Skinner.
Even Jack Quinn, you want to see have a better year. That's mainly due to injuries.
Right. Yeah. Well, when
he was on the ice, he was
with
awesome.
With Quinn, it's a different story just because you have to kind of ease him back in and hope he doesn't get hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
Then if that happens, you have a little bit more of a problem on your hands of an injury-prone player that has good potential but just can't stay healthy. But with a guy like Peterka, he had such a good season last year, but like I said, now he's replacing Jeff Skinner, who even though the Sabres traded, had a good year last year.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, Skinner's time with the Sabres was up and down in terms of production,
yep.
But overall, he was a very reliable goal scorer and a reliable point getter. And that's what Peterka needs to become now for this team. Tage needs to return to what the 40-goal season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he needs. And same with Tuck. Tuck that season with Tage was incredibly good. But those types of players need to start following through with this. And if they wanted that accountability that hopefully Lindy Ruff will bring, then you can expect that. But as Kevin Adams said this morning, if they want accountability, they're going to get it, and they need to back it up.
Early reports now on practice too have been, I mean, he was really harping on going offside in practice.
Yeah. Which
stop,
a lot of
stop drills to bring everyone together.
Yeah, and a lot of
how we're gonna do
reporters
it.
Are like, you know, a lot of the guys that are there and are saying, you know, hey, that's something that we haven't seen in a few years.
I get nervous on hearing that because I heard somewhat similar about Granato. Not on that issue, but it was other things of, you know, haven't seen this in a long time once Granato took over. So I.
Yeah, well, that's fair, but
the results need to be on the ice.
Right, exactly. You know? It's not that I don't care what goes on in practice, but if it follows through to games, then sure. Whatever they're doing in practice works.
Yep, keep doing it. 803-0550 is the number to call. How are we feeling about the start of the Sabres season? We will hear from Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff with the media coming up later this hour. He's expected to speak around 10:45, could be closer to 11. But after a quick timeout, we will hear from Sal Capaccio, as the Bills do have a game to not play this week, as the weekdays do technically start on Sunday. They play on Monday night hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars, but they will practice today, so we'll get a word from Sal here after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WG.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
GR.
I think we have a group that is ready to be challenged and pushed. And I reminded them also that yesterday, that when you use words like accountability and structure and they're looking for clarity and looking for more competitive, hard practices, they're going to get it. It's one thing to say it, and now we have to back it up and do it.
There's Buffalo Sabres general manager Kevin Adams earlier today with the media. It's been something that I am, I don't want to say interested or worried in, but it's going to be something to keep an eye on. This organization, or the players, after Granato was fired, pretty much all of them talked at locker cleanout about wanting accountability and effectively wanting a tougher coach. You know, we'll see. I was also somebody that really held on to their year prior locker cleanout comments of being, you know, mad that they were not in the playoffs, and like legitimately like didn't really want to speak with the media, really upset that they were no longer playing hockey. And then the next year they come out, and apparently at camp it was just a big old nothing burger. And that, so I'm very apprehensive with basically everything the Sabres do, because it's just, you've been burned so many times. You're Charlie Brown in this situation with Lucy. That's what you are.
Who's Lucy?
The organization themselves.
Oh.
and we are Charlie Brown.
And the football is a winning.
Anything positive.
Like, not even winning, just going to the playoffs.
Anything positive that's worth anything. Like, Taylor Hall signing is definitely positive.
Oh, yeah. But,
and then he played hockey for the Buffalo Sabres, and it was anything but.
And that was Lucy pulling away the football.
Exactly. We will hear, though, from Sal Capaccio here in just a few minutes as the Bills are back to practice today. They are getting ready to host the Jacksonville Jaguars for Monday night. And we will now go to the Western Hotline as Sal joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Well, I'm doing well, but I'm just waiting with bated breath with you guys and Lindy Ruff and Paul Hamilton and, you know, what's happening down at the arena with Rasmus Dahlin. I mean, man, that was just, talk about a damper. Let's just hope everything's okay. Maybe it's something personal and you hope nothing bad personal. Maybe not an injury, but holy cow. Like, I'm waiting like everybody else is.
And it's one of those things, too. Like, you can't make it up. We're like 5 minutes into the first day of practice. Vibes are feeling good. Lindy shows up.
Yep.
He's in the Sabres gear. You're like, all right, here we go. And what do you mean Dahlin's off the ice? Where is he? And then eventually we get the news from the Sabres that he won't be returning. It's just, it's just a damper on the mood, too. I mean, we were going to talk with Mark Long at the AP to talk the Jaguars soon. It's like, it's the Sabres now. But, Sal, we do obviously have a Bills game coming up on Monday night against the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Bills going back to practice today, of course, with the week getting a little weird due to them not playing Sunday but Monday night.
Yeah, for sure. So just to set up the week for everybody, it's a normal Wednesday practice. We will not get an injury report, an official one, today because they play Monday night. So that doesn't start till tomorrow. It's based on when you play. So that'll happen after tomorrow's practice. You'll have a Wednesday practice, a Thursday practice, a normal Wednesday here to hear from Sean McDermott. We're going to hear from him at noon, practice at 12:30, and then we'll get Josh Allen and other players after practice, and then practice 12:30 tomorrow. They will be off on Friday. Normally you have that, you know, final tune-up practice of the week on Friday. It's just a very light, quick practice. That'll happen on Saturday this week, and then, you know, Sunday will be basically a day off, and then Monday night will be the game. And, yeah, the team gets back after it. After a nice little mini bye, I guess, here, guys, there really was nothing going on with the team. I'm sure they came in, had some meetings, injury checks, things like that. You know, as far as getting on the field, you know, it's been, 6 days? And, you know, they'll get a chance to kind of get their feet back under them before getting back after it and have a nice 11-day break between games.
Sal, real quick, from yesterday, Tom Pelissero reported the Bills did work out two kickers, Andres Carlson and Cade York. Is that really anything to take from? I know fans have very much been nervous about Tyler Bass, maybe is maybe the best way to put it. He has only that one missed kick, both from the season and then one missed kick in the preseason. He's been good on extra points. But the kick against Miami in a non-pressure situation, I mean, if you were worried about Tyler Bass, that's kind of the prime example. You put it in a dictionary of, like, that's why I'm nervous. But, you know, it's weird for me, Sal, too, because then I look at a guy like Justin Tucker, who I know has had the longevity. But him past 50 yards, I think he's 1 for 8 in his last 9 or something along those lines. But is this maybe something to keep an eye on here?
I think it is, because we know Tyler Bass struggled last year, and he had his struggles in training camp this season. He was good in the preseason until the final kick that he missed. The team has shown a lot of faith in him. They've been supportive of every turn. And that's just not words. That's also actions, because they never brought anyone in during training camp, guys, right? There was never another kicker here. Now, there was a punter who could kick a little bit, but there was no competition for Tyler Bass. But then he misses very badly that kick on Thursday night, and then here come two kickers to work out. So a couple things. Number one, this is not abnormal to have positions working out throughout the year. Even when you don't have a need at a position, teams bring guys in because in case something happens 2 weeks from now, a month, 2 months from now, you have a baseline knowledge of people you've brought in where you can say, oh, okay, we saw this guy, we know what he's about, we got him on speed dial. You know, that way it speeds up the process. This is not abnormal to do something like this. You might see quarterbacks work out. It's not like they're replacing Josh Allen, because you just want to make sure you're kind of buttoned up in case something were to happen to one of your quarterbacks. So this could happen here with kicker as well. That said, I don't think it's a coincidence this is happening now with Tyler Bass's struggles. You don't have to bring in people. You're not necessarily bringing them in every week at all these positions. So given his struggles, given the fact that it goes back a little bit to last year into the preseason and then Thursday night, and then they do this, I do think it's something to monitor.
Well, Sal, I know it's still 5 days away, but Jaguars, the Bills have had issues with them over the past few years. I mean, what do you think it's going to take for them to just kind of get over the hump this time and see a better game out of them? I mean, like I said, it's been kind of weird games in the past few years between the Bills and the Jaguars.
They have. And listen, I'm not one that puts a lot of stock into the historical significance of these games. I would for like the Bills and Dolphins a little more because they're division rivals. They play each other twice a year. It's been Tua for the last several years and Josh Allen for a while. Here in Jacksonville, yes, they did beat him with Trevor Lawrence last year in London and Doug Peterson. It was Trevor Lawrence's rookie year before that, but it was Urban Meyer, completely different people on each side of the ball. Can you go back to the playoff games? I mean, come on. That's Tyrod Taylor. That's Doug Marrone. Let's remember Josh Allen's rookie year. They did come here and they won. Although I do understand when you look on the other side and you see the Jaguars helmet and you go, oh my God, that team has had the Bills number. I get all that. And that's why fans would be apprehensive. I just don't think that what happened in 2017 or 2019 has any relevance at all to 2024. To beat this team, though, you're still going to have to play really good football. And if the Jaguars win, I don't think it's because the Jaguars certainly have some sort of Bills number. I think it's because they played a better game that night and they have some matchups they can, you know, try to take advantage of. The Bills are the better football team. They have the better quarterback. They're playing at home on Monday Night Football in front of a obviously hostile, raucous, whatever, incredible crowd. They have the advantage here. And what they need to do is just basically play their game that they've played for the last 2 weeks. Play the kind of defense they played the last 2 weeks. Do not allow, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars offense to get the ball to their playmakers in space. Travis Etienne, you know, Gabe Davis is coming back here. We'll see about Evan Engram, what his status is as the week goes on for the Jags. And the Bills have injuries they're dealing with. I think what really benefits the Bills here is obviously having the 11 days to get healthier, but also, guys, having 11 days to have a plan in place with Baylen Spector and Dorian Williams and, you know, if you're missing Taron Johnson, Cam Lewis, like everybody together. Remember, when that happened last Sunday, the opening week, you have the injury to Taron Johnson, and you have 4 days to kind of put that together. You really had to do it on the fly. And then you couldn't really do anything much different. They've had a chance to kind of step back, reset, take a look at what they want to do. And I think that's a big advantage for them going into this game.
Sal, last thing for me here. The Bills, following their game against Jacksonville, will head to Baltimore to take on maybe surprisingly 0-2 Ravens team, but they're not the only 0-2 team in the NFC or in the AFC North, I think, worth noting, the Cincinnati Bengals. Just real quick, you know, what do you make of both of their starts, both losing to teams I would say arguably they should not have lost to? And which team do you have more faith, I guess, to be there at the end to kind of rally? Because we've all seen the stats about teams that start the season 0-2 and making the playoffs. It's not a pretty picture. But both these teams do feel, I mean, way better than their winless record.
I'm sorry, you said Ravens and?
Bengals.
I wasn't high on the Bengals coming into the year. I just think that they lost some pieces on defense. I don't know how great their pass rush is. And then Joe Burrow, I'm just concerned about that wrist injury, although he looked really fantastic on Sunday, obviously. I mean, their number one running back is Zach Moss, right, after losing Joe Mixon. I mean, to me, the Bengals weren't a team that I really thought could take the next step or another step. It's kind of either plateau or go down. However, that said, I thought they played really well against the Chiefs. They surprised me. I thought they played well enough to win. Obviously, they had a play at the end where it didn't go their way. There was a pass interference. I get all that. So I'm feeling different today than I did going into the season about the Bengals, and they do have a very, very winnable schedule coming up. You guys go look at the Bengals' schedule coming up. The Bengals could win their like next 3, 4, 5 games or something like that. Like we could be talking about the Bengals, you know, like we have been the last several years after the next month. The opposite side, I felt a lot better about the Ravens. The one thing about the Ravens that nobody really talked too much about and we should have been talking about is all the changeover on their offensive line. They lost 3 starters, and it has not gone well to start the season on their offensive line. And we all know they don't have all these great weapons to throw to. It's like, to me, what I didn't like about them, it's coming to fruition. I mean, Derrick Henry, they're already a team that runs the ball. They go get a guy just to, what, run the ball a little better? It's never made sense to me. Like, they're already pretty good at it. I don't know what that really did for them, to be quite honest. And I'd be worried about the Ravens if I'm in Baltimore right now. Now they got to go to Dallas. That's a tough game. I think the Bengals are in a much better position than the Ravens going forward, given their schedule and what I've seen from the two.
All right, Sal, well, let's go get ready for practice. And, of course, Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff's comments here coming up in just a few minutes. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you later.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
That was Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. We are going to take a quick break here as we get ready for Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff's comments with the media. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We are waiting for the start of Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff's comments with the media. But we do have major news that does involve Western New York, even though it is a major sports breaking news, and that is ESPN reporter Adrian Wojnarowski. No more. He has announced his retirement after, I believe, 37 years in the industry. He spent his past 7 years with ESPN, and he's coming home. I think it's well known that Wojnarowski is an avid St. Bonaventure supporter. He is an alum. And with that, he is accepting the GM role with the Bonnies basketball program. That does, of course, involve NIL, name, likeness, and English, name, likeness, and image allocation.
Name, image, and likeness.
Yeah,
NIL. Yeah. You said name, likeness, and
NIL allocation, recruiting, all that. I mean, it's genuinely a general manager. Bonaventure, though, has been a program that has done very well with very, very limited resources in the Atlantic 10 Conference. And with him coming into the program, the results may not be immediate.
It's going to be exciting, though. I mean,
I'd be very surprised if this not if this is not a major moment for St. Bonaventure. Again, it, you know, limited resources. It is a very small school. I personally love it.
As you said, too, multiple times. Local.
But yeah, he's local, and that's going to be really, really cool to see. Again, wonderful for him to kind of realize as well. He has a wonderful post on his Twitter page, kind of talking about, you know, time isn't forever. You want to do something that you are putting your full heart into. He wasn't feeling that anymore with reporting. But for his choice to not just really be retirement, but to, you know, help out now his alma mater, which I'm a huge St. Bonaventure basketball fan, I think that's going to be awesome. And now I desperately want to go back to Bonaventure to go see a game, because the Riley Center is phenomenal. It is an old building that just gets rowdy real fast. The locals there are wonderful. It is a great time. If you haven't been, definitely try to go. If you're from the area too, try to go before the weather turns. But man, I'm very, very excited now for St. Bonaventure college basketball. This move could be terrible. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah, but I mean,
I'd be very surprised if it was.
With the history of what Woj does for basketball,
yeah,
and just like the notoriety that brings in itself, I think that is not to be taken lightly.
Yeah, and I mean, he's always been like a noted alum of Bonaventure. Always roots for him. A lot of times when, like, if he's ever brought on to talk college basketball, he always will say like "Go Bonnies" and stuff like that. Like, it is a lot of fun. I'm very surprised though that like that's happening. It's absolutely wild. And they've done very, very well with very limited resources. Mark Schmidt has been a phenomenal coach there. Really brought the program back from the brink. They had NCAA violations and such when he got there. It was one of the worst programs in Division I men's college basketball. And since he has been there, Mark Schmidt's been there. He's been there since 2007-08. That was his first season. He's made three NCAA tournament appearances. He's made the NIT semifinal back in 21-22, and they just won 20 games last year. Very, very exciting moving forward for them. You hope, though, that like it's not a position where he's just kind of there as like the name, and that they're not actually able to bring in the NIL resources I think they're going to need. But I also wonder, though, how much of the A-10 actually does have in terms of the NIL. I know the MAC is not necessarily a big NIL conference, that being the conference with UB. So we will see. Very, very excited, though. We are still waiting for Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff to join the media. Of course, the big news from today in terms of Sabres practice is the unknown on Rasmus Dahlin. He did leave after about 5-10 minutes. He was the first player on the ice, left, never returned. And it's kind of up in the air now. No one really even knows if he took a hit, if it was an injury or not. Right. Sal brought up, I think, correctly that maybe it was something, you know, personal, that like he had to leave and go take care of something. I hope it's not serious. But it has kind of left every Sabres fan sort of in bated breath of, all right, like, then what?
Okay, what's going on?
and it didn't help either that, you know, ultimately it didn't lead to anything. But Tage Thompson took a shot from Peyton Krebs early in practice, mm-hmm. and he was laboring, and it was just it was compounding of like, oh goodness. Right.
There's quotes from Alex Tuck. Our own Paul Hamilton has some up on his Twitter, a couple of them from his post-practice press conference. Tuck said in past years they haven't been ready on day one, and that has to change this year. He also said that he came in with a chip on his shoulder, that he needs to be better. He said they need to push the guy next to them. So seems like a very team mentality of, hey, guys, let's get it going here. But again, I've heard this before. It needs to translate to on the ice. And if it's, you know, if it's a team thing and if the coach is fully behind it, which I wonder if last year, was it a team thing and the coach wasn't behind it, so there was no accountability to hold the team to that standard? The team can only hold themselves to a standard for so long. I mean, you have to have – that's why the coach is there. You're there to
– the quote-unquote adult has to kind of
– Exactly, yeah. You're there to hold your team to that standard when they're not holding themselves to that. And of course, the captains are there for that too. But if the whole team is not bought into the same mentality, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also heard in past years, oh, everyone's bought in. Everyone's here. Everyone's here for this reason.
Yeah.
Okay, prove it,
I guess,
please.
The thing, too, is like I look at Tuck's comments about, like, you know, we didn't always have it on day one. Today we did. And I'm like, I'm apprehensive with everything with the Sabres.
Oh, no. He's talking about day one of the season.
Oh, day one of the season.
Like the first game. He's saying we have to have that.
Okay.
Be ready the first day of the season rather than a couple weeks in.
So I was going to say, and I'm like, I get apprehensive with that because we saw last year that ultimately, I guess, the season effectively ended the first day of training camp because everyone kind of saw it's like, oh, they don't have it. You know, but yeah, he talks, they have a chip on their shoulder. He has a chip on his shoulder.
Tuck also said on just the first Lindy Ruff practice in general, quote, I looked up at the clock midway through and thought to myself, this is going to be a long day.
I feel like every athlete's been there.
Right. Yeah. Like the first practice of the year there. And you're like, oh, like I can think
you
back
do
to
look up at the clock and go, no way.
I can think back to like soccer practices at the beginning of the year where it's like, yeah, we've just ran our third mile of the day and we're an hour into practice and we have 2 hours to go and probably six more miles. Let's get it done.
let's make peace with whatever God you know and get through the day.
Yep.
But it's that's been something that I think Sabres fans have wanted. And then now you heard it at the end of last season, which is not that long ago. Sabres players wanted it. They wanted that accountability. And we heard Sabres GM Kevin Adams speak earlier today that it's one thing to say it. It's another thing when it's actually there, and are you going to kind of embrace it a little bit? And that's going to be something now to keep an eye on with them. We are going to take a quick timeout here. We're still waiting for Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff to speak with the media. We're going to take a quick timeout. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.